When was the last time you went to a bookstore? These cherished institutions are a bit harder to find than they used to be, but those of us who love the written word can spend many happy hours in them, browsing and buying. Now, the story of these endangered businesses is told in The Bookshop, A History of the American Bookstore by Evan Friss. Evan is a professor of history at James Madison University and the author of two other books. Here he is to share five of his key insights.
Hello, I'm Evan Friss, a professor of history at James Madison University and the author of The Bookshop, A History of the American Bookstore. And I'm delighted to give you a book bite, which, by the way, I think is the perfect term for a book about bookstores. Back in the 18th century, Oliver Wendell Holmes described browsing in his favorite shop as book tasting, which makes one hungry for more than he needs for the nourishment of his thinking marrow. The term browsing dates to the 15th century, when it was first used to describe how cows and goats and other grazers munched on vegetation. So browsing a bookstore is like tasting, or taking bites of books. So here are some bites and insights and big ideas from the book. The first insight is bookstores have never been more dead or alive. In 1958, Americans purchased roughly 72% of their books from small, single-store personal bookshops, the kinds that we would call an indie today. And even as recently as 1993, the U.S. Census counted 13,499 bookstores, or roughly one bookstore for every 19,000 people. By 2021, however, there were just 5,591 bookstores left, or one bookstore for roughly every 59,000 people. Today, the biggest bookseller isn't even a bookstore. It's Amazon. Whether independent or corporate, whether in New York or New Mexico, bookstores have been disappearing. If bookstores were animals, they'd be on the list of endangered species. That bookstores continue to endure is, in some ways, something of a miracle. Pundits predicted they would long be dead. So did booksellers. One joked that books have been a dying business for at least 5,000 years. 19th century booksellers worried that public libraries would destroy them. In the 20th century, the boogeyman was the radio, then the movies, then TV, then mass market paperbacks, and then the superstores. In the 21st century, ebooks and Amazon have been the existential threats. The fear that the book business is imperiled, near death even, has always been an industry staple. In 1887, Henry Holt lamented that bookstores no longer exist, at least as bookstores. They are toy shops and ice cream saloons masquerading as bookstores. In 1930, H.L. Mencken asked what could be done to rescue the poor bookseller, destined to become a bootlegger, or even worse, a chiropractor. Bookstores may be endangered spaces, but they are also powerful spaces. The ubiquitous image of the quaint bookshop and the Bacardigan bookseller makes us blind to their power. The right book, put in the right hands at the right time, could change the course of a life, many lives. And for those who support the quirky, the local, the independent, for those who subscribe to ethical consumerism, for those who crave being blanketed by books and talking to humans about books, and for those who appreciate what's wanting in online transactions, bookstores have never felt more alive. The second insight is we are what we read. What we read is dictated by what authors choose to write, what publishers choose to publish, and what, where, and how booksellers choose to sell. All bookstores are, in a way, institutions that reflect the cultural, intellectual, economic, and political world around them. But they are also actors that cast their own shadows. Any colonial bookstore that sold Thomas Paine's Common Sense might have been accused of dealing in radical literature. Benjamin Franklin helped stir the revolution, in part, from behind the counter at his own bookstore. In 1834, David Ruggles opened the anti-slavery bookstore in Lower Manhattan, with advertisements running in William Lloyd Garrison's abolitionist paper. It served as an overt political space for anti-slavery activists to gather, learn, and plot. Within a year, an arsonist burned it to the ground. Both good and bad, bookstores have been at the center of political campaigns, shaping our views, our politics, our thoughts, and our identities. The Aryan bookstore was much more than a place to buy something. It was the de facto headquarters of American Nazism. When Craig Rodwell, hardly a big reader, opened the Oscar Wilde Memorial Bookstore in 1967, it was one of the first gay bookstores in the country. Making a profit was always secondary to its real mission, to promote literature that would help gay people feel better about themselves. The bookstore was an intellectual space for thinking and learning about homosexuality, a safe space for people to ask questions and talk openly, maybe even for the first time, about who they really were. Unlike the mail order businesses that preceded it and the online stores that succeeded it, the bookshop was not just an outlet for the acquisition of literature. It was a space that fomented political change and influenced what people read. It was a place where people met friends and lovers. As one writer in 1981 put it, the Oscar Wilde Memorial Bookshop is one of the pleasures of being gay. Being political is also the point at Word Up, a bookstore that opened in 2011 in the Washington Heights neighborhood of Manhattan, known as the Little Dominican Republic. Here was a multilingual nonprofit community bookshop and art space that also reminded its readers to fill out their census forms. It introduced certain books to a particular population. Outside were books offered for pay what you can. Inside, the bestsellers were For Brown Girls with Sharp Edges and Tender Hearts, A Love Letter to Women of Color, and signed copies of Wild Tongues Can't Be Tamed, 15 Voices from the Latinx Diaspora. The political books selling everywhere else didn't move at all at Word Up. Today, most of the news stories about bookstores and booksellers and librarians center around censorship and book banning. No matter the perspective, everyone on every side implicitly agrees to the same truth. Books hold power. The third insight is being surrounded by books matters. Bookstores stimulate our senses. Sociologists have found that just growing up in a home full of books, mere proximity, confers a lifetime of intellectual benefits. Bookstores offer warmth, comfort, and refuge. It's no wonder, then, that so many social media accounts deal in what we might call book porn, glimpses of book-stuffed bookstores, libraries, and wood-paneled dens. At the same time, books are imbued with a near-holy spirit. Many of us wince at the idea of throwing one in the trash. That's part of the reason why entering a bookstore can feel like walking into an old church. It's the same phenomenon when you're surrounded by books in a magnificent library. Ask anyone who walks into the New York Public Library in Manhattan what they feel like doing when they walk up those steps, past the lions, through the marbled halls. They want to read. They want to write. And maybe for the first time, they want to be a scholar. Our environments matter. The fourth insight is get off your screen, feel the bookstore. We can only delight in the sensory experience of a bookstore if we choose to. So keep your phone in your pocket and see, hear, feel, touch, and smell. One of the things I wondered about in my research was how the physical experience of browsing changed over time. The colonial bookstores were certainly noisy with the thundering presses and the groans of the men working them. The books looked and felt very different, too. And what did the shop smell like? Well, by and large, the customers stank. Soap was expensive. The same clothes were worn over and over. Baths were often once-a-year occasions. Then there was the scent of the ink in the barrels, on the pages, and on everyone's hands and aprons. The books had a distinctive aroma as well. Some people love the scent of a book. It reminds them of something, usually books. It conjures memories of a nose buried in a paperback, the children's section of the local library, or the aisles of a used bookstore. Some say they prefer the smell of a Penguin paperback, and it must be Penguin. Some think old books smell a bit like chocolate. Others find the smell possibly dusty, musty, mildewy, offensive. Some lose their taste for it over time. The sweet smell of decaying paper appeals to me no longer, George Orwell, a one-time secondhand bookseller, wrote. It is too closely associated in my mind with paranoiac customers and dead blue bottles. Inside bookshops, it's the tables and shelves and lighting that point us in certain direction. So do the booksellers. When we engage with a trusted bookseller, when they tell us to buy this book, we often do. In fact, shoppers are about twice as likely to leave a brick-and-mortar bookstore with a book they didn't expect to find or even knew about than if they had browsed online. So while the internet retailer knows who you are, where you live, and which books and electric toothbrushes you've bought in the past, it's the neighborhood bookstore that remains an influencer. Why? Because it's the bookstore and the booksellers that make us feel something. The fifth and final insight is bookstores can be places to lose and find oneself. The power of the bookstore doesn't just emanate from the books, the architecture, and the staff. The customers also make the space. Neither home nor work, these third spaces function as critical sites for social and cultural exchange. They nurture existing communities and foster new ones. They are de facto public spaces, gathering spots. They cost nothing to enter. People often just want the company. More so than bars or coffee shops, they are also places in which to get lost, and by the way of the books, to escape reality. For every chatty customer, there's another who prefers to be left alone, to be by oneself among others, to feel a book's heft, to smell a paperback's perfume, to savor slowed time. Part of the joy of bookstores is that they are so versatile. They can be community spaces, activist spaces, political spaces, and they can be places to lose and find oneself. I appreciate you listening to these Book Bites. Thank you. And I very much hope you enjoyed hearing a bit about my book. Either way, head to the local bookshop. I promise you won't regret it.
Thank you, Evan. That was five big ideas from The Bookshop, A History of the American Bookstore by Evan Friss. Also check out our book bite for Portable Magic, A History of Books and Their Readers by Emma Smith. I'm Michael Kovnat. Have a great day.